We Talk Podcast presents...
What it is! What it do! Welcome to Stick Boy... Fresh Take collaboration, although you're finding this on the Stick Boy Podcast Network. I'm your host, Joshua Adam. Well, I'm not with the one, the only, the man we like to call the ultimate babyface, Mr. Joel Janssen.
How's it going?
It's going good, Joel. We are going to kind of experiment today. You know us kind of doing our thing on the One Fall podcast, the biggest thing to hit the internet in the wrestling community since Dave Meltzer dropped the newsletter. But today, we're just going to kind of just hit a whole bunch of random topics.
Yeah. I got a lot of things I might like to talk about just at random. So
for sure. So the biggest thing is, in about 3 minutes, the NHL, and the, well, I guess it's technically 4 minutes, because it has to be at 12:01, not 12 o'clock Eastern time.
Yeah.
So in about 4 minutes... the NHL and the NBA will open their free agents markets and teams can sign. Now, the difference is those NHL free agents, they can sign and do whatever they want. We've already had a little bit of breaking news just before Aaron Ekblad signed an 8-year deal and he's going back to the Florida Panthers. No shock there. He was a restricted free agent. The NBA is a little different, where in the NBA, pretty much you just agree to sign with that team. But you can't make it official till the 9th. So you can more or less talk and make a handshake agreement, and then it'll be official on the 9th. Now, this handshake agreament can backfire, like we saw with DeAndre Jordan last year. In the first 2 days, he made a deal with the Mavericks to go there, and then as we know, as the Twitter insanity pursued, he ended up going back to the Clippers. So sometimes that handshake deal doesn't always stay. The DeAndre Jordan was one of the first times that's ever happened, after the Clippers like kidnapped him. But for the most part, if you make a commitment, you will go. So for the first 5 minutes or so, we're going to talk about some of the bigger moves in the NHL. Joel's going to ask me some questions about the NBA. And if anything breaks with the next 5 minutes here, we're going to break it here and also kind of give our predictions on some of the bigger free agent moves as they go on. And we're not just going to be talking about sports. So if you don't want to hear about sports, Joel and I will have a timer on here. Same when we talk about movies, comics, and all that kind of stuff. But we're going to talk about sports because Joel and I very rarely get to talk about sports. I normally keep a lot of the sports stuff on the Fresh Take side, but it's nice to get Joel's impact on stuff. So yeah. Here we go.
Well, I think the NHL, it's going to be very interesting. Like, I mean, we've had a bunch of crazy stuff happen in the NHL in the last 48, 24 hours with...
Mm-hmm.
Halsey getting sent away from Alberta, and Subban, who donated $10 million to a children's hospital, and they stated that he will never, ever leave Montreal, and what do? They send him away. So it's been crazy. I mean, Stammer's off the market now. That's the biggest thing.
And Joel won a bet on that one.
Yes, I did. I thought, my thinking on this, and it's good to get this on a podcast, is I think Stammer looked at it like this. He gets to walk the streets of Tampa Bay and live anonymously. A few people are definitely going to know who he is. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I don't think hockey's a huge thing in Tampa.
No, compared to, let's say, Jameis Winston walking down the street, he's a bigger deal.
Yeah, so it's definitely... I think he likes that living, you know, anonymously. And that's why I thought... Man, you go to Toronto, you are now center, we are going to know everything about you. So, and you're going to live under a microscope, because Toronto is that place where you live under such a big microscope of everyone's like, what are you doing? Why did you make that one single pass in the second period to that one player that you shouldn't have? I think he kind of looked at it as, he's making bank. In Tampa, so it makes the most sense for him to stay there.
I thought a team like the Red Wings would pursue him a little bit, or Scott Roblin had really thought that he would go to Detroit, especially with using the Pavel Datsyuk contract, trading that to the Arizona Coyotes, freeing up that cap room. But I mean, there's still a few big NHL free agents, so I'm sure Detroit, you know, they've been so consistent. Them, the New England Patriots and the San Antonio Spurs are just the picture of consistency in all three of those sports.
Oh, yeah.
St. Louis Cardinals you can also put in there to a lower degree. I don't think they're in that Spurs, Pats, Red Wings territory, but they're definitely just a tier below it.
Yeah.
And I still think Detroit's going to rebound. As for Toronto, look, it would have been great to get Stamkos there, but they're going to be fine. They just got Auston Matthews. Yeah. They have Mitch Marner. They have Nylander. They have Morgan Riley. The Leafs are looking really good for the future.
Yeah. And, I mean, here's the other thing. You suddenly sign Steven Stamkos. Where's all your money going to suddenly start going? And you're suddenly going to be in a situation like Edmonton where you're like, uh-oh, we have all these guys that are going to demand the highest amount, and I still stand by it. I think McJesus is going to make $10 million in Edmonton. He'll be the first $10 million man in the NHL. You suddenly have all those contracts stacking up. It's hard to make moves. It's going to be very interesting because Adam Larson is a defensive defenseman. So it's going to be interesting to see how the fans respond to that. And also there have been rumors that...
They're going after Tyson Barrie as well.
Yeah, Tyson Barrie. And I've also heard that Lucic had a conversation with the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, so that has changed too now. July, I talked to you off air, talked to one of our correspondents that lives in the Edmonton area and had heard some things. And Lucci had met with the Edmonton organization, and now he's talking to Dallas, like you said. But they're talking to Colorado about a trade for Tyson Barrie. And I just had the name on the tip of my tongue. Plays for Colorado. So forward.
If it starts with 12, I'm going to be a little concerned.
No, it's not Iggy. It's not Iggy.
Okay, that...
It's a big-time forward, though. And I don't know who the pieces would be. You would assume you've heard names like Drysdale and Eberle be out there, and they're really still trying to get their defenseman of the future.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go to the roster. It's. I had this name on my tongue all night. I've literally been talking to people about it, and it's just one of those things where it's like, how can I not remember who this is?
Yeah. It's definitely interesting. There's going to be teams are going to look very different. Like the Flames are definitely going to look different when puck drop hits for that first game up in Edmonton.
Landeskog.
No way. No. They ain't going to move him. He's the captain.
It was very close this afternoon.
I can't see that.
I don't know what the pieces are, but it's Tyson Barrie and him Edmonton. And I don't know what the pieces would be. You would have to assume at least Nuge and Eberle is part of that.
Nuge, Eberle, that's a big piece to give up. I just don't... I don't know. That's
Colorado's in this weird spot, right?
Yeah.
There's this ascending amount of teams that are kind of one-hit wonders right now in the NHL.
Yeah.
It kind of started with Colorado. It was Colorado one year, and then it was the Flames.
Yeah.
And then this year, it was the Panthers. And will the Panthers make it back to the playoffs? I don't know. They have a lot of young talent, but sort of that Avalanche team and sort of that Flames team, and then they kind of dip down. It's just the way it goes. The young talent over exceeds itself, much like Colorado did with Nathan McKinnon and all those great guys there, and then they kind of take a step back. And even Nathan McKinnon really hasn't done much these past two seasons.
Yeah, it's been a little quiet for Colorado, but I can't see. But then again, stranger things have happened. Maybe this is a shakeup that both teams want and need. It'd be very interesting to see. I find it a little weird. Usually, big players like that don't get moved divisionally. They usually kind of push them out of the division.
Yeah, what we've seen so far in the NHL in just the week here, Joel, it wouldn't shock either one of us.
No, because it's been crazy. I did not expect Weber to ever leave.
No. Well, it was two people that were such core foundations of their communities that it's just hard to believe that they would be gone.
Yeah, it's very weird, and it's very, like, you know, it's a little shocking. You still don't fully grasp that it's real. You're not going to grasp it until you're sitting there actually looking at them in the different jerseys next year. You're going to be like, holy crap.
NHL free agency and NBA free agency are just so – it's just – I think the best part about sports too is the movement of things. It's the things we love doing in video games. It's just so exciting. I mean, NHL and the NBA both on their respective networks and countries for their sports centers TSN in Canada is going to have everything dedicated to the NHL tomorrow. ESPN is going to have a lot of stuff dedicated to the NBA stuff. I mean, the Vertical with Woj has a big theme ready for the NBA. I know Bob McKenzie for the NHL stuff is already ready. Players are meeting right now in the NBA as we talk. I'm sure they're meeting in the NHL as we talk. There's guys like Troy Bauer, who the Flames may have a chance at for a cheap deal, and that's a guy who has playoff experience with the Capitals and the Blues, and that's the kind of guy that the Calgary Flames would look for. And I find, you know, like, let's get everything off the table. We live in Calgary, so we're going to be a little bit biased towards the Flames. I'm just going to put it out there. But I look at the moves the Flames are doing, and they're very calculated moves for the kind of pieces that you want to lead into your future. And Edmonton is just kind of just making moves that they are desperate to just get the pieces that they think they need. And in doing so, they sacrificed their future. They sacrificed their future with Taylor Hall to get a guy like Adam Larson because they so wanted any type of decent defenseman.
I definitely agree with you. I think they sacrificed. It's going to be very interesting. The biggest thing with this is you kind of have to wait and see how things play out, because we could be sitting here ripping this trade apart, but then when we look back at everything, we go, oh, that actually worked.
Yeah, J.D. Lewis, who we're going to have on the Fresh Take Network next week, so be sure to check that because he's going to talk to us about UFC as well, but he's the devoted Oilers fan to his detriment. And I mean, a lot of Oiler fans that I have in my life, from my brother-in-law to Chad Coughlin, a friend of ours, it's hard, you know. They go through a lot of nonsense. They've had all these first picks over and over again. As Flames fans, it's just kind of waiting the process. You know, we have our nice young guys, but we're not expecting a guy like Sam Bennett to jump right out the box and just kill it, you know?
Yeah.
But they're expecting those from those first-round picks. They have to kill it right off the bat.
And it's a lot of pressure, but the land of hockey is good, and it's going to be interesting. Like, nothing's broke yet.
Do you like that? If the Flames can get Troy Bauer, don't you think that's such a perfect move for them?
I don't know, because I'm trying to remember. There was someone that had shifted around from St. Louis to Washington. I believe it was Troy Bauer, but I'm not 100% sure, but I've heard that there was someone that would say it like it is in the locker room, and he would rub a lot of people the wrong way, because if someone made a mistake, he'd call them out for it.
Well, I think that's what you need sometimes as young players.
Yeah, I think that there could be the benefit of that as well. Totally.
Because
but
you Mason Raymond got waived today, and there's not a lot of veterans in that locker room. And I think a veteran presence that's been deep in the playoffs, been around guys, you know, like a David Backes, who is a free agent as well. I'm interested to see where he goes, if he resigns the Blues or if he goes somewhere else. I think that's a nice little piece for someone, a player like a David Backes. But Troy Bauer, also, he's one of the best players. He was leading the playoffs and scoring, I believe, at one point.
He was doing well for himself. There was no knocking him. But it's going to be very interesting, because you want to bring in the right pieces that will complement the guys that you have right now. So it's going to be very interesting. I mean, Calgary's got a decent chemistry built right now.
They got their goaltender.
Yeah, in Brian Elliott. So it's you kind of sit there and you kind of go, don't want to do anything crazy. I don't want to spend a ton of money on someone over the hill. I'm very kind of
No. And from what I've heard for Troy Bauer, it'd only be like $2 million.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty low.
Yeah, which is perfectly okay. I do have a few questions for you, though, on the NBA.
Sure, hit me up on it.
Well, who do you consider the top free agent right now?
That was a runaway. That'd be Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant? Where do you think he's going to go? Because he's cursed. And,
by Little B?
Yeah. And
well, Little B says if he goes to the Knicks that he won't curse him anymore, which is weird because you would think that Little B would want to go to the Golden State since Little B is from the California area and the Bay Area.
Yeah, it's because I saw some of the NBA finals, and it just seemed like Oklahoma City just had Golden State right where they wanted them, and then they just.
The thing with them is, I put it down to a lot of coaching, where they had this lineup of Stephen Adams and Enes Kanter, who they're trying to trade today because they're trying to get Al Horford because he wants to play with Kevin Durant and vice versa. But they just didn't play those guys down the stretch, and they were really killing the Warriors inside. You know, the Warriors, as good as they are, they're kind of a fluky team at times. And you see it, it's the old Duke basketball mantra, it's live and die by the three. And in the finals, they ultimately died by the three.
Yeah.
For Durant, him and Russell Westbrook, man, it's the chemistry. They love each other as friends, but on the court, it's kind of like oil and vinegar, you know? It doesn't always mesh well together. They're such different players. They're both the alpha, and it's very hard for the alpha to always work with another alpha, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the moves they've made since the draft, bringing in a guy like Victor Oladipo, they've been looking for a long time to find their shooting guard, their two guard, and they finally found it in a guy like Victor Oladipo, who's from the D.C. area, like Kevin Durant. His best option would be with the cap exploding even more next year. I think he can make about $25 million, $30 million this year.
Yeah.
If he signs a one-year deal, he'll become a free agent next year with Russell Westbrook. And then he doesn't become as much of the villain if he leaves. It's the both of them leaving.
Yeah.
And he would be able to sign a deal for $35 million a year. To put that into context, Steven Stamkos signed 8 years for $68 million overall. Kevin Durant can make that in 2 years of his contract.
That's crazy. The contract sizes are bonkers. Like, I look at the NHL, and I always kind of like, wow, $5 million for that guy? And then you look at the NBA, Major League.
$5 million is like a standard for a scrub.
And it's crazy, because you're like, you're making what type of money?
Well, also, I think with the NHL compared to the, let's say, the NBA and the NFL, the reason the salaries for that are so much bigger, and Major League Baseball as well, is because of the TV contract. The NHL has no major TV deal right now. They're not on ESPN. They're on NBC, and they're barely on NBC as far as the states go. Yes, they signed that big deal in Canada with Sportsnet, and that's great, but it doesn't work as well as far as America. That's where the main revenue is coming from, is in America. You know, the Canadian TV deal is terrific, and hockey's such a big deal there, but it doesn't work as well as they had that big of American deal. And that's, I think, something the NHL has got to look at when they come back, is maybe trying to jump into an ESPN or to a Fox or something, because Fox and ESPN really run the sports side of things. You look at what Fox has with baseball, the college football playoffs, NFL. You know, they rotate the Super Bowl and whatnot, but NHL isn't on one of those major networks. It's on NBC, and it doesn't get the coverage that those other ones have. And it doesn't, like, the Stanley Cup isn't on a main network. It's on NBC, but it's not really ever the main show on NBC. Sometimes it can get bumped pretty easily, you know? It's not like a crown jewel of NBC like the NBA Finals are for ESPN and ABC.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. My next biggest question is, there's two of them, at least from someone that's an outsider for basketball. First one is, what does Golden State have to do to repeat?
Or they're not going to repeat, but well, to get back to where they are?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they got to get a big. That was one of their problems down the stretch there. Bogut got hurt, and that really, really hurt them when Andrew Bogut went down. So they got to try to figure something out there. They're looking at guys like Pau Gasol, Al Horford, another guy. They may bring back Andrew Bogut, Festus Ezeli, a guy they drafted. He's a free agent. They also have Harrison Barnes, who's a big free agent. He's on Team USA. He struggled at the end there. He's a restricted free agent, which, for those that don't know, restricted free agent, doesn't matter who he signs with. They can match. Philadelphia and the Lakers are two of the favorites to sign him. The Lakers, just because his ex-coach, Luke Walton, who was with the Golden State last year, is now the Lakers head coach. So maybe a little bit of a reunion there. And as far as Philly, you know, they're not really a good team, and it'd be a chance for him to be the big fish in a small pond.
Yeah.
But they have to get some of these key players back, get those bigs. And, I mean, I think one of the things that really killed him this year is, you know, you and I had talked about it all year. Even if you're an outsider to this, it's, do you go for the 73 wins? Like, do you try for it? And I think going for those 73 wins got them a little tired. You know, Steph Curry was injured for a good 2 weeks, and I think it's because they went really hard for those 73 wins. And in doing so, they tired themselves out before the NBA Finals. And I also think when you watch the NBA Finals back, they played hero ball down the stretch there again with the too many threes, and they had chances to drive in and get an easy layup.
Yeah, I definitely even noticed that, where sometimes you just got to go for the easy points instead of trying to go for the flashy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My next question for you is LeBron James. Is he staying in Cleveland?
Yes, no question.
No question?
There's
going to be none of this? Because I see that they can opt out of their contracts.
Yeah, so LeBron's been...
Explain that to me, this contract opting out, all this.
So you get player... the NHL, I don't think... Do they not have player options and stuff? Options? Yeah, so in NBA, you have player options. So LeBron, just the way the cap can pump up, if you take an option, you get more money on it. So LeBron, for the last 3 years now, has just been signing a one-year deal and added a player option to it, and then he'll buy out of the player option and then become a free agent again.
Oh, okay.
Because LeBron is one of the heads of the player union, so he knows how the cap works and all the money's working and everything like that. So LeBron isn't dumb. He's a businessman, and he knows how to control everything as far as business for him.
That makes sense. I'm not going to fault him for that. I would definitely want to be a little bit more controlled.
We do have one signing, though. Jakeem Noah will be going to the New York Knicks.
Okay. What does that mean for the Knicks?
It means that they're better than the Raptors, for our Canadian fans. I'm sorry.
Okay. Because he played for the Bulls.
Yeah, and now he's back with Derrick Rose. So now they have signed Jakeem Noah a little earlier, because now the Knicks have their meeting, I believe, Saturday with Kevin Durant. So now they get to go to a meeting with Derrick Rose, Carmelo Anthony, and Jakeem Noah. And be like, these are our guys, and now we want to add you to that. You get to come to the East, which means if you're in the East, you don't have to go against San Antonio. You don't have to go against the Clippers. You don't have to go against Golden State. Your main team in your way is the Cavaliers. Maybe, you know, there's teams that are okay to decent, like the Raptors and Atlanta and Boston, but they're not. With that lineup, no, the Raptors and Atlanta aren't even, depending on what the moves they make, they're not even on their level.
What will the Raptors be doing?
They need to get a power forward and maybe shore up their bench, but none of the major free agents are really looking at the Raptors. It was a one-in-a-lifetime type of season for the Raptors. I would expect them to take a little bit of a decline, and we won't see them back where they were next year. It's just it was a nice little story, but eventually reality's got to kick in.
Yeah, much like the Flames fans.
Yeah, and New York's a bigger market, and they've been in their division. Boston's in their division, and they're just a bigger market, and they're just going to get bigger free agents. But Toronto, I think they can. The thing with Toronto has to do is, you have to be smart. You have to get those littler free agents that are going to make a big splash and not take as much money. And it's kind of what the Raptors have been doing, right? They've gotten guys like Kyle Lowry. No one believed in Kyle Lowry. They signed him for a cheaper contract, but then they worked through the draft as well. That's kind of what the Raptors are going to do. They're not going to get Kevin Durant because his favorite team growing up was the Raptors and he's friends with Drake. He doesn't care about that, because when you play for the Raptors, if you're an American, which a good portion of these NBA players are, you have to pay Uncle Sam and Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And why would you want to do that?
No. Nope.
You know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That definitely is something that you gotta...
I'm hoping the Raptors make a big move. One guy I really like for them is Ryan Anderson. The game has developed now to these what we call stretch fours, where they're the big guys that can shoot the three ball. But it seems like his interest is more with the Lakers, with Washington, and with the Houston Rockets.
Well, it's just like any big sport. You kind of want to go where there's, at least for basketball, you kind of want to go to these bigger markets.
And yeah, I mean, to a degree. Go ahead.
I think the biggest thing, like you said, with Toronto is the location of it. It mm-hmm. is you're crossing over that border, and you've got to deal with going over all the time. You've got to deal with if you're from some nice warm sunny climate and you're suddenly coming up to Toronto, it gets cold up there very easily.
Well, that's what a good barometer will be, if they can keep a guy like DeMar DeRozan, who's from California. They can keep him and keep that partnership with him and Kyle Lowry, and it shows like, oh, this guy wants to stay here and wants to win. And the one thing that will work for the Raptors is that crowd was arguably the third best crowd in the NBA. You probably have Golden State number one, and then it's a three-way tie between the Raptors, San Antonio, and Oklahoma City.
Yeah, it definitely was. Like, I remember watching it and just being like, wow.
I've been to both Toronto and San Antonio as far as crowds. I will say Raptor fans were great, but they're not as good as Spurs fans. Because, listen, like, if the Leafs are in the playoffs at the same times as the Raptors, that city is going to generate more towards the Leafs. It's just the simple fact of things. San Antonio has no other sports franchise. They live and die with the Spurs there. They're split as far as NFL franchises go between the Texans and the Cowboys. Mainly more Cowboy fans there, but still it's not as close to as passionate, and especially in Texas, which is such a football state. Everything in San Antonio is about the San Antonio Spurs.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I think sports, I'm feeling...
Yeah, one last thing I'll add is one big free agent to look at is Dwayne Wade. Mm-hmm. He is not very happy with Miami. And they're in a weird situation, Joel, where they have two big free agents. They have Dwayne Wade and Hassan Whiteside. Whiteside is meeting with the Dallas Mavericks as we do this podcast right now, and they're the heavy favorite to land him. But they kind of are hoping they can re-sign Hassan Whiteside, but sign him to the max. But Dwayne Wade has taken pay cuts the last 3 years. He took the pay cut the year they brought in LeBron, and he took a pay cut last year as well so they could try to figure things out. And he kind of wants that Godfather Kobe Bryant contract where the last contract Kobe signed, he made, I believe it was something like $100 million.
Holy crap.
And it crippled the Lakers. He was making $30 million a year, and it was half the Lakers cap from one players, but it was... This is more just like everything you've done for us, Kobe, and Dwayne Wade wants that contract. And if he's not going to get it from them, he's going to walk. Which it's, you know, it's weird to see some of these players are just such a guy in this team. If you're not a basketball fan, it's you're used to seeing guys like Dwayne Wade in the Miami Heat and Dirk Nowitzki on the Dallas Mavericks, and both these guys have taken pay cuts for so long, and both are a little frustrated.
Yeah. I can definitely relate to that. That's definitely something that, you know, even as fans in hockey, for players that have to take, like, pay cuts, and then they don't get you kind of get swept under the rug. Oh, you're a nice little hand. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, we've seen Tom Brady do that with the Pats as well, right?
Yeah.
Which is so bizarre why Tom Brady always gets shit on, but he does everything he can to make the Patriots the best, you know? Like, he's taken pay cuts and done a whole bunch of stuff. Yet he still gets shit on for the stupid football thing. We're not going to get down to the Deflategate rabbit hole, but I think that's the kind of thing that Wade's looking at right now is, look, I've given everything to the Miami Heat. I'm the greatest player in this franchise's history. People know when they think of Miami, they think of Dwayne Wade, and I want some respect for that. And right now, he's in Spain with LeBron James on a vacation and Chris Paul. And when he gets back, he's hoping to figure things out, but he sent feelers out to the Spurs, and you know that's again where basketball is just respected. There, they've made the playoffs 20 years in a row now.
Wow.
They've only missed the playoffs one time with Coach Popovich and Tim Duncan, and that's it. So you know that's a city that breathes, and it's an organization that is just modeled as not just in basketball but all of sports, like we talked about. With New England and Detroit, they all kind of model each other. So it's going to be really interesting in all these sports. I'm interested to see in hockey what Vancouver does because they're just a mess.
Yeah.
And as far as the NBA, it's going to be interesting too, just because we saw last year as far as the NBA went, in a lot of these markets, sometimes it doesn't matter anymore if you're in a big market. You look at Greg Monroe last year; he had meetings with both the Knicks and the Lakers. And he ended up choosing Milwaukee. And it's kind of because you can kind of get the same reach you can in Milwaukee with social media and everything that you can get in a decent way with the LA and the New York. And also, Joel, I think sometimes people just don't want to deal with the media in New York or LA.
Oh, yeah. And it's the same. Like, it goes back to Stamkos. Having that, the spotlight shines so brightly on you. And the media being so crazy.
Yeah, well, and that's for hockey, that's Toronto, right? I mean, we're always like the Lindros. Everyone wanted Lindros, but it's like, you know, now he's a Hall of Famer, but everyone was like, could he handle the spotlight in Toronto? And I looked at a guy like Dwight Howard, who was rumored to go to the Knicks, and he won't be going there anymore. And I just, like, he couldn't handle the L.A. media. There's no chance in hell he could handle the New York media. He's just too fragile. And you've seen players in the past, some of these bigger media networks, you're going to go. Like, I would never really want to sign with the Knicks if I was a player.
Yeah.
Just because New York is, it's the Mecca, and you get to play in the Garden, and it's awesome. But you also get to go there two times a year, and you don't have every single mistake you make under a microscope.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So yeah, should be interesting. What before we go, who's a guy that you've seen from the free agent class that you're hoping that the Calgary Flames would add?
I don't know, cause kind of looking at the list, and you kind of go through it, and you're kind of like, there's some decent pieces, but some of the pieces require a little bit more money, and I want that money to kind of go to Johnny and Monty.
That's the weird thing with the NHL is the cap is so hard, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the NBA, like you're saying, you really have to get to it. In the NBA, there's the luxury tax. You can go over. You just got to pay a luxury tax. So yeah. That's why, like, the Lakers in the past and the Knicks and the Heat and all these guys are like, all right, well, yeah, I guess we're going to go over the cap, but I'll just pay the luxury tax. Like, the Nets, I think, last year, in the past years, paid something like $200 million in luxury tax. But it's just like, all right, well, we got to pay the price, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, not the same thing with the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely makes things a lot more challenging at times.
So, shall we move on?
Yeah, I think I got something for you that we never really got to have a podcast on, but I've always sat there and thought, you know, this be neat to talk about, but Serial, Anand Saeed.
Huh.
He gets a trial, and you and me have been followed that case pretty closely when we were listening to the podcast and doing those deep dives. What do you think? Everything that has happened?
I think I'm about a year removed now from that podcast.
Yeah, it would be about a year. A year, I think.
Well, when I say that, Joel and I got into it more midsummer last year after the fact of the kind of the blowover of it all. But, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of parts of it where I went back and forth so many times, and I'm not sure if he did it or not. But, you know, I don't hate the idea of him getting a trial with everything and all the evidence up front to get it figured out. I don't hate that idea.
Yeah, because I look at it, and, like, you're absolutely right. Like, that was such a... It was such, like, you sit there and you think about some of the stuff, and you go, did he? Like, there's some stuff.
It's kind of like, in a way, like, I want to kind of cross paths with another big trial we've been listening to a lot with OJ stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of evidence going both ways and stuff, but there's also the evidence of, like, okay, well, then who else did it?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, it's pretty overwhelming that Abnod did it to this girl because it's like, well, if he didn't do it, then who did?
Yeah. And I always stand by, there's a lot of things that you could see that it just like, but how long could you sit there and be like, I'm innocent? Wouldn't there be a certain point where you'd be like, well, yeah, no, I'm done. Like, yeah, like, I'm online, and one of the Baltimore papers, you see a picture of this guy, and you see a picture of him in high school, and you see him now, and you see him just in the handcuffs, three security guards around him, have guns, he's chained up, and you're just like, what, that would be such a miserable life. But it's really interesting, because that news popped up, and I was like, oh, wow, and then you start thinking about all the stuff and going back and forth on the case, and you're like, I wonder what happened. I really would love to know what actually happened.
It's just kind of the fly in the wall situation, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like the OJ Simpson stuff, where you'd like to be just kind of like, what happened? What really happened that fateful day?
We have breaking news in the NBA.
Ooh.
Hassan Whiteside has signed with the Dallas Mavericks.
Ooh.
He's a bigger free agent. His story was really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, he was just a guy that he was looking for an NBA trial, and he was really on his last legs, and then Stuttgart for the Heat, led in triple doubles and all that stuff. Anyways, there's going to be a few breaks in here as we break free agency news, but yes, back to the cereal.
I didn't listen to the second season as much for cereal, but the first season.
Second season, I really didn't like. It was just because it was like, why am I supposed to feel bad for this guy? Like, what's the story? He deserted. He obviously deserted. I don't know what else there is about this. And I mean, it's an interesting story about him going beyond enemy lines to meet with the Taliban and all that stuff. But the thing about serial that I think you and I both loved was that serial drama, pardon the pun in a way, of did he or didn't he, right? It's this murder mystery. And with that, it's just like, okay, well, this guy escaped. It's just, what is he standing trial for? Is he did it on purpose or he didn't? And it wasn't very exciting. I think you need to get back to the murder, and it's messed up in a way because it's like the OJ trial. You know, these people celebrating the streets, and you can't separate it in a way. It's kind of like we talked about with wrestlers on One Fall. It's you look at these courts and you listen to this stuff, and you take it as fiction because any media at times we get involved with these people as characters. They're on Game of Thrones or something, and it's they're real people. You know, you look at the OJ case, and people are cheering the streets, but the Goldmans just lost a son, and the Browns lost a daughter. And I can't remember the girl from this, but, you know, their family lost a daughter, and people are cheering and wanting Adnod just because of this podcast, and it's got to be hard for them in that way.
Yeah, it was Hey Min Lee.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the one that had passed away. It's definitely, and now I don't know, he probably if he had committed this crime say 40 years ago and someone had caught wind of this case would not have the tension that it does now, but that's because of the podcast, that's because of just social media.
By the way, sorry, this is one of the problems with the free agency. Is there's going to be fake sources out there and fake Twitter accounts.
Yeah.
And that's what I just fell for. It was a fake Twitter account.
It happens. It definitely...
Anyways, continue, Joel. Sorry.
It's definitely the power of social media, the power of Twitter. I don't know if he's truly guilty or not, or innocent, or wrongfully convicted, because there was a lot of messy things with his trial. But there's also a lot of things that just didn't sit right, and there was a lot of kind of the back and forthness that I was like, I just don't know. I don't know what this guy did, and it's what kind of hooks you. Like you said, it's that murder mystery that you're kind of like, and that's why I think we have like the obsession with the O.J. Simpson stuff. It's just kind of like, oh, well, we're hooked in this. We love listening to this stuff and hearing about it and being like, oh, I wonder. I don't know why we get hooked in this stuff, but we do.
Yes, we do. I mean, it's kind of the thing is, like, everyone's always on board for a good murder mystery, you know?
Yeah.
Just like the whodunit, and, you know, in the future, we're going to be talking about the Chris Benoit case. And there's a lot of aspects to that. And in ways, that one, to you and I, hit us a lot more personally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not that we know any of the Benoits. It's just, as fans of wrestling, it just hit you so hard. And with this Adnod thing, is like you wanted to believe this was just an innocent kid, and there's a lot of what would make this guy just kind of snap, but you can understand reasons why he would just snap.
Yeah, and I mean, the Benoit thing, to not go down that rabbit hole.
We're saving that for just to break some news here. That's going to be its own podcast, and we really want to bring Mo in on that because, you know, I was 21 at the time. Joel was a lot younger as well. We want to make – and Mo was, I think, in his 30s. So he's going to have a fresher view of everything as well. And it's three different areas of what happened with that trial. And for me, I lived through the OJ trial. I was 10. Joel was, I think you were born.
Yeah.
But you didn't even have the concept of murder yet. You were just a young, innocent pup.
Yeah. And since it's kind of tied in there, like the 30 for 30 on the OJ Simpson was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see that and you're like, holy crap, and the people versus OJ. Everything has been kind of the OJ story, and it's really fascinating how much people get sucked, like really get sucked into that world and are very fascinated by it. Like, I know I was fascinated by it, especially for someone that didn't grow up and didn't have an opinion in 1993,
1994. It took the internet, social media-wise, by storm. And I always like to think, too, Joel, of cultural events that if you just imagine if Twitter was around, and that Bronco chase is always the one I come back to.
Yeah.
Like, the crying Jordan memes would have been in full force on an OJ and a Bronco. Or just the Bronco with the crying Jordan meme. And just Twitter would have been ablaze. I look at one of the bigger events we've had for that was during the Boston Marathon bombing. And just the killer, killers. The bombers, even, if you want to say that, running through the streets and finally hiding in that boat. But it was so – I was someone that got to cover that, and it was just like thrilling, and the social media updates and Anonymous and everything. It was crazy because I remember the Anonymous accounts had kind of hacked into the Boston radio, and they were like tracking everything that was going on. It was nuts, and I almost wonder what that would have been like with OJ if they could have hacked into the radio to the police station there and found out what's going on with the cab and the Bronco and all that stuff. And Adnan, we never really got into that. It was just kind of this no name guy, and just kind of got famous from being on a podcast. And I think if it wasn't for the podcast, there's no chance in hell this guy gets a retrial, because who cares?
Yeah, this suddenly brought something to people.
You get bigger profit lawyers, you get bigger profit courtroom. It changed the game.
Yeah,
it's going to be the same thing with the Making a Murderer case. He's probably going to get another trial because you're going to get bigger lawyers, and it's a bigger idea of everything on it. And you know, it's so crazy. You have all these different circumstances in this past 2 years, from Serial to Making a Murderer to all the OJ stuff. America, I'm going to say in America right now, it's North America, it's Canada, and the States. I don't really get the impulse from Mexico. I'm sorry, but as far as the States and Canada go, they've just really been obsessed with these two things.
Yeah, like, the Making the Murder has kind of died down a little bit, but at the same time,
I think most people kind of accept that he's guilty.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, because you still kind of wonder, is he guilty? Like, there's a lot of things that say he did it, and there are a lot of things that say he didn't. Like, it's a lot like an odd, and it's very much kind of that back and forth where you just don't know. The biggest thing I think people forget is with the social media and everything, is suddenly everyone becomes a detective. Someone becomes an expert in law. And and the people that lost someone in that, it's just, you're reliving it over and over again because someone's sending out tweets, someone's sending out something, someone's saying, no way, you screwed this innocent man over. It's all this negative stuff that comes with it, and you're like, jeez.
Well, and I think, too, it's a thing that I'm going to use a friend of ours from the pod, Paul. Sometimes people take stuff because it's on the internet and they think it's gospel. Yeah. For example, our friend Paul is the kind of guy that falls for Arnold Schwarzenegger died in a ski accident. Or if he sees a casting for a movie, he's not going to double check his sources. He's just going to think, oh, well, that was on the internet. It's gospel. I'll use an example today. There was a story for some B site that had a Mortal Kombat casting, but it had like Vin Diesel and Megan Fox and pretty big actors in it.
Ronda Rousey.
Yeah. And I'm sorry. It's not real. It's not real. They would have announced this on an IGN, on an IMDb, on Machinima. None of those sources that talk about that stuff talked about it. So, you know, it's fake right away. I mean, it's a nice little casting to have Ronda Rousey as Sonya Blade and Vin Diesel as Shao Kahn. But it's not real. And I think because people take it on the internet, they don't double check sources enough. And my point in all this is it's the same with Adnod or the Making a Murderer situation, where it's on the internet, and the way they dictate it is Making a Murderer definitely didn't show you the other side of things. They just showed you his side. They just showed you Stephen Avery's side. They didn't show you any other side of it. And with Adnod, they did a little bit of a better job of showing you both sides. But still, I thought it was a little biased towards him.
You definitely, like, and it's the one thing, it's so hard to be unbiased at times, because you'll start to form your own opinion, and that will influence how you do things, why you're doing something. why you say certain words at certain times, you're going to have that influence. So it's really hard to be unbiased at times, because like if I'm sitting here reading the Anand case and someone that thinks he's guilty only gives me the guilty facts, then I'm going to be like, oh, well, he's guilty. It's cut and dry and simple. But then if someone else gives me another folder that has him looking innocent, then I'm going to be like...
It's TV manipulation at its finest, and I don't know, because we're journalists and we've been taught better if it's different, but to me, it shouldn't have to be just because, you know, you and I have been taught triple-check your sources and everything from our time in broadcasting school. I don't think that should be the underlining of this. You should just know that, period. You should know to check another source and not just take something for gospel. The fact that I can make a fake thing right now and be like, oh my God, Brexit is not happening. Benedict Cumberbatch is the new Prime Minister of England. And I think I could probably get – you think I could probably get about 1,000 people to believe that?
Worldwide, you probably get – I'd probably go 500.
Yeah, but you could get enough people to kind of buy into it that are stupid and just look at stuff and be like, even if you put a fake CNN graphic next to it, people are like, oh, well, there's a CNN graphic.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the story that we didn't hit on One Fall, but the idea that there was a site saying that Roman Reigns was going to sign with the LA Lakers and that he had signed and he had played games. It was just one of the most ridiculous things I had ever heard. But, you know, the guys that went to it, they went to a whole line and they put an ESPN graphic up and all this stuff, and people just bought into it. And it's like, come on. Like, some people are just so stupid. And the fact that a guy actually called into Live Audio Wrestling and asked them about, like, two journalists that cover the world of wrestling and they're on TSN radio up here in Canada and acting like, oh, how come you guys haven't reported this? It's like, well, because it's not true. Because if it was, an anchor like Kate Burness or whatever basketball experts would have been talking about it. It's so crazy to me sometimes how people get stirred around and stuff and manipulated. It's the idea that television does all the time, right? You have a villain, Game of Thrones, like a Joffrey, right?
Yeah.
But you can change it to anything. You could make Breaking Bad in a different version, have it centered around Hank, this hardworking cop, you know, this family man. And all of a sudden his brother-in-law is this evil drug dealer. And Breaking Bad's all of a sudden a much different story. You can do it with Mad Men and be like, this hardworking housewife, she loves her kids, but her drunk, cheating husband comes home all the time, and he's just a piece of shit. But we don't get that. We get Don Draper, kind of an anti-hero. Walter White, the anti-hero.
Yeah,
Dexter. Dexter, I was brother hated. He's the ultimate anti-hero.
Yeah.
It's how you manipulate things, and in some of these crime stories, they've definitely manipulated to what their view of it is.
Yeah, I definitely don't disagree with you. I do think, out of all of them,
I think Adnan has a better chance of being innocent than Stephen Avery. I will say that. I think there's a lot of weird hillbilly stuff with Stephen Avery. It's and like the cell phone stuff and all that stuff with Adnan, I can see a lot more of a case for it. The Stephen Avery stuff, it's weird. And look, I know he was set up and everything the first time, but there's a lot of weird stuff with him and that family.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Here, let's, you know, there was one other thing I definitely wanted to hit on after, because I knew I wanted to bring up the cereal, but,
it was a good conversation.
Yeah, a little bit more of a positive thing, and speaking of Bryan Cranston, there was a trailer that came out with him and James Franco called Why Him?
I haven't seen the whole thing yet, I just saw the little clip you sent me, but I liked what I saw.
It definitely,
I don't have to see anything, Joel, it's Bryan Cranston, so I love it, I'll tell you the power of Bryan Cranston. So Devin Seal, who we have every week for Fresh Take on doing our Hollywood podcast, absolutely had no interest in this Power Rangers movie, and now he's all in.
Oh, yeah.
Because Cranston's in it. He doesn't care about the suits or anything in this Power Rangers movie, but because Bryan Cranston's in it, he's all in now.
You know, Bryan Cranston can do anything. And I sat there and I watched when you sent me his Sweet 60, 65.
Yeah, by Jimmy Kimmel. Yeah.
I love the whole thing, the Gustavos, everything. Just the little nuances in there that you just are like, this is awesome. Like, Breaking Bad, he will never have to work really hard in his life anymore. He can just kind of enjoy it, work on different movies that he wants to, and he can kind of have fun. And you're seeing that a lot. Like, this, this Why Him is basically a comedy that has some, you know, slapstick humor. It's probably not going to do amazing with the critics. I can already kind of see that, feel that. But I think it'll be a fun movie that you can sit down with your buddies and watch and laugh.
There was another interesting trailer that came out, I don't know if you saw, was the Meet the Joneses.
No.
And it had Gal Gadot and John Hamm as some spies.
Oh, wow.
And the other couple, I think it was Zach Galifianakis, and I can't remember who his wife is in it. But interesting premise. John Hamm hasn't hit on the screen yet. And Gal Gadot, she hasn't hit outside, well, if you ask most people, she hasn't hit at all outside of Fast and Furious. But hasn't hit. I thought she, I think, she, you know, you and I agree, she's one of the major hit points of Batman vs. Superman. She has one of the more iconic superhero scenes, entrances of all time. One of the best entrances for a superhero ever in a movie. I think we can both agree on that. I just rewatched The Ultimate Cut, and her entrance still gives you goosebumps.
Like, just the music and everything, and just the look. And
it's one of the best scores of all time that I don't believe he did, but it's one of the better scores that I think was non-John Williams in a long time.
Yeah. It was definitely, like, just everything about it was solid. I was like, you know what? I give the dues. I thought they did a very good job, but I still look at Dawn and Justice and go, we could have Bryan Cranston as Lex Luthor. And that very well could have helped the movie, I think.
I think it would have helped it for sure. And it's weird because you watch the Jimmy Olsen scene back now, and I think it was a better scene in the Ultimate Cut. But it would have been nice if, and I think even if you didn't have to have Jesse Eisenberg as him, you know, you didn't have to have him as Jimmy Olsen. I thought the Jimmy Olsen they had was really well done, and I would have preferred that Jimmy Olsen. And even if you had him as Lex Luthor's son, I would have been fine with that, to be honest.
Yeah, it definitely, like, Jesse Eisenberg's character.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I think, you know, you look at, like, I typically, if Bryan Cranston was not in this Why Him, I probably wouldn't have much interest in it.
Well, it has Franco, so I'm in already.
Yeah. And that definitely helps it, but it wouldn't be something that I'd be, like, rushing off. And it definitely, like, when you announce certain people are involved in projects, it definitely helps the overall project, because then people will generate a little bit of buzz. Well, if Scorsese was part of Why Him, then I'd be like, well, I have to check this out. Martin Scorsese is involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that name carries such weight, and I think the same thing for sports or anything, you have a big name attached to things. People are a little more intrigued in it.
Well, this is kind of what brought us into this podcast, so I think it's best the way to maybe end it. Because there's so many subjects I want to talk about, but before I get into the subject I'm going to go with, what do you think about Cranston and Power Rangers?
I'm all right with it. Like, I mean,
What was your level of, were you planning on seeing Power Rangers before Cranston was in it?
No.
Okay, and now you want to see because he's in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward.
So what did you think about the suits before into this? Did you like the suits, or you just didn't care about anything really with the movie?
I was meh on it. I was kind of like, it's there.
I think you add, you know, I recently had watched back Power Rangers. I mentioned this on the pod that I did with Devin, but it really doesn't hold up. When you were younger, it's like, oh yeah, this is cool. And then you realize a lot of it's from a Japanese show where it's just a lot of B-roll footage and the syncing is really terrible. And I'm fine with the syncing off in anime, but not live action.
Yeah. I look at it as, like, the Power Rangers, you know, it's something from your childhood, it's there. You know it's Bryan Cranston in it, and you suddenly have people interested. It's very similar to the Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Bryan Cranston in it. Look at the trailer with so much Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, and they killed him off. I was so mad. That ruined the movie for me. That's why I wanted to see it, because Heisenberg was in it.
Yeah. And he just come off.
Breaking Bad just ended. Yeah. So this is really the first project that was, like, post-Breaking Bad.
Yeah, something completely different.
It really shows, like, his nerd stature. It's kind of like what Benedict almost has in a way, right? Where Benedict can go on something and it just adds interest to it automatically.
Yeah.
They go, Benedict Cumberbatch is that. I think Chris Pratt has that to a degree right now as well. Yeah. If Chris Pratt's in something, people are like, oh, Chris Pratt's in it, I'm going to check that out. But it's kind of much like Harrison Ford had back in the day, too. If Harrison Ford was in something, he just kind of had that, oh, well, Harrison Ford's in it, so this is going to be great. I'm definitely going to watch that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a handful of guys that have that rep now.
Yeah, I think Cranston is definitely one of them. And it's because he took a chance on a TV show. But what's the closing subject, Josh?
Let's talk about Mr. James Cameron. So he recently said that he didn't like Force Awakens because it has a lot of the same beats as the original. It's the same boring, lame idea that people keep on. I hate that excuse. It's a lazy excuse against Force Awakens. It's lazy to me. Don't you find it lazy?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things. It's an easy go-to.
Like, for sure.
You definitely can see it, but at the same time, it's like, that's your easy, like, oh, that's where we're going to go with it now.
Yeah, like, I see, obviously, there's parallels there, but at the same time, you know, you could do that with a lot of movies. I think that's with the Death Star shit, for sure, I see it, but, you know, I think Rey and Luke Skywalker are very different people. I think that Kylo Ren's a very different person than Darth Vader. And, you know, you can't really compare Han to Obi-Wan. It's a different situation there as well, you know?
Yeah.
And there wasn't, like, the family function, or, like, Han didn't sacrifice himself. Like, people have put that Han sacrificed himself, like Obi-Wan. He didn't sacrifice himself. His son killed him.
Yeah.
He didn't expect him to come. He went to see his son and bring him home because his wife asked him to.
Yeah.
He didn't expect to get stabbed in the stomach. Spoiler alert, if you're one of the 2 billion people that saw Force Awakens.
The one person that's listening to this podcast is just yelling right now.
Well, too bad. Han Solo dies. Get over yourself. You should have seen this movie and helped it beat Avatar and Titanic. You're the reason we're talking about James Cameron right now. Yeah. So, do you think that's maybe one of the reasons he doesn't hate it? Because it's the all-time domestic, and by domestic, it's Canada and the United States as far as box office. It's number one all time. It's ahead of Avatar and it's ahead of Titanic domestically. Overseas, it didn't do good. But you and I have had this talk so many times in movies, Joel. We don't get the overseas because they love Transformers and they loved Warcraft, and we hated Warcraft over here. Warcraft did $40 million domestically. Overseas, it did $500 million.
It's crazy, like, how... And it's definitely interesting, because you can have stuff that does not do well here, but it's very weird. Like, I don't get it.
The last Pirates of the Caribbean did so good over there, too. That was another one that was just weird.
Yeah, it just seems like... I don't try to figure it out.
Yeah, it's a bizarre thing. I didn't hate that last Pirates of the Caribbean. I just didn't love it.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with you there.
So when we talk about James Cameron is Joel and I were talking, and look, this may start a controversy, but I don't think it should. I think James Cameron's overrated.
Yeah, I think here's my thing. If we were talking about James Cameron after Terminators, he'd be easily
high. True Lies too. I gotta say True Lies. True Lies is awesome.
Yeah. Same thing with Titanic. If we were talking about directors around that time, Cameron would be up there. And you can't deny the impact Cameron's had. But his latest adventure with Avatar, I'm sorry. It's Josh, I'll let you. This is your thing.
I don't get why. What has he done? I'm gonna look at his IMDb right now, and I'm gonna tell you what James Cameron has done. And tell me, Joel. Like, first of all, Avatar is shit.
Yeah.
It's Fern Gully.
Yep.
If you haven't seen Fern Gully, go check it out. But it's Fern Gully. So, I think first we got to look at him as far as a writer. So, he wrote the original story for Aliens, and the original story for The Abyss, and the original story for Terminator, and Rambo Part 2. So, I'm not saying he is an all-time overrated, because all-time, James Cameron is a top 5 director ever.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. But, after True Lies, Joel... where is the hit?
Yeah. Like,
I mean, some people did like Terminator Chronicles, but that wasn't him. That was the characters in it.
Yeah.
And you look at his IMDb, and there's four. There's four Avatars. He's going to make five. Avatar 2, Avatar 3, Avatar 4, Avatar 5. Nobody wants these movies.
Yeah, no.
Nobody wants them. Nobody wants Avatar. I know it's the highest grossing movie of all time, and I think the main reason for that is the explosion of 3D at the time.
Yeah.
But after True Lies, so that's 1994, was the last movie that he wrote that was exceptionable.
Did he? I thought he wrote the Titanic.
No.
Yes, he did. It was written. Let me look this up. Just make sure. It was written by James Cameron.
Maybe I missed that.
Yeah, so Titanic was the last thing that I think he wrote.
Okay, he did write Titanic, but still, then I don't put. True Lies is the better movie than Titanic.
Yeah.
I would watch True Lies. If you had to watch one of those movies 10 times over, would you rather watch True Lies or Titanic?
Can I throw in Terminator?
Yeah, for sure, but that's not the question.
Yeah, I'd go probably True Lies.
Yeah, like True Lies is one of the greatest spy thrillers. Honestly, I think it's one of the best Arnold movies ever.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. Like, obviously, you probably put Terminator at the top for Arnold. I'm not denying that. But then what would you put number two for Arnold? I think it's better than Predator all time for Arnold.
Ooh. Arnold. Like, I think for Arnold, you can definitely have at least Terminator 1 and 2 around that list.
Yeah.
I think. I mean.
True Lies was, like, one of the first really good mixes.
Total Recall.
Total Recall, okay. I will give you that. That's better than True Lies, for sure.
The Last Stand.
Yeah, but that's not better than True Lies to me, though, as far as Arnold. Kindergarten Cop, debatable.
Batman and Robin. That's it. Batman and Robin.
Junior.
Oh.
But so, like, you know, my point is, so sure, if you want to say Titanic is the last great one, because Titanic, and I will give it its credit, it's a fine movie. I'm not over the moon about it compared to other stuff, but it's fine. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
However, it's not at the level of a True Lies. It's not at the level of a Terminator.
Yeah.
So in the past 17 years, since Phantom Menace really came out, if that's where he's going to go with, if the prequels are better, there has been at least 10 all-time better directors.
Yeah.
And if you look at the body of work, we're going to name five better directors since he really started in the 80s. So we're not going to put the Kubrick. Well, yeah, I guess you could put Kubrick on there.
Yeah.
Right? Because Kubrick has stuff. Oh, what does Stanley Kubrick have that he wrote since the 80s? I'm going to look that up right now.
I'm looking that up. Written.
So Shining's in the 80s.
Yeah. And he's got a few upcoming projects.
And he pissed Stephen King up with that too, hey?
Oh yeah, there was not.
So he had two big ones, Joel. He had Shining and Full Metal Jacket. And Eyes Wide Shut, which I've never seen, but I've heard stuff about. But as far as iconic, two of the more iconic movies of all time.
Oh yeah.
So what's iconic that Cameron has compared to Kubrick really quickly here as we kind of go side by side with these iconic movies. So Terminator 2.
Yeah.
The original Terminator is good, but I don't think it's an iconic movie. Like if you're going to go and put like introduct movies into the Hall of Fame, Terminator 1 is like just in the cusp, but it's just missing the vote.
I think I look at The Shining's definitely one of them. 2001 Space Odyssey, Doctor Strangelove.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, you got to go from the 80s on. So that's why Shining just hits it.
Yeah, Shining just hits it, Full Metal Jacket.
So those are both in. Eyes Wide Shut's not making the Hall of Fame.
No.
But so for Cameron, what's making it in for Hall of Fame-wise? Titanic's making it in, fair enough.
Titanic.
Does Avatar make it in because of the box office?
The box office definitely plays a role in it. You can't deny the box office.
I don't know if I give it my vote, though.
It would be very hard for me to give it a...
I give it because it, as far as like as the resume goes, it reincorporated 3D, which you can take as a positive or a negative. I think you and I would take that as a major negative. But it reintroduced just the one thing I will say Avatar gave is just a better theater experience. That's the one thing I did take away from it. It was one of the better theater experiences I've ever had. With the sound was different, and the presentation of a movie with Avatar was different.
Yeah.
So in that aspect, maybe, but we're not going to base it on box office. We're going to base it on quality of movie. Fair?
Yeah.
As we go in this and we pick the five better directors, what we're going to do more or less here, and there's not going to be any more podcasts. This is it. So if you don't want to listen to this, I don't know why you want it, but we're going to pick about five, probably five. Overall, we're going to look at these resumes right now live, and we're going to pick the five directors that are better than James Cameron. We're going to try to find it, and we're going to play it wholeheartedly, because this is the question that we've really been asking, because this all really stained, because James Cameron said that he thought as a filmmaker that the prequels were better than Force Awakens, and this really pissed us off.
More so you, but...
More so me, yeah.
But it definitely, like, for me, like, if... So we mentioned Stanley Kubrick. Another name that I think...
And is Stanley Kubrick the best director of all time? Or is it Spielberg?
No, it's the guy I'm just about to mention. It's Scorsese.
Hitchcock? Oh, Hitchcock's up there, too.
Hitchcock's definitely up there, too.
Hitchcock doesn't have anything in the 80s, does he?
No, I don't believe...
So I don't think so, either.
No, but I mean...
Do you want to just do all time?
Yeah, let's do all time. Let's do top five all time.
Because then we get Hitchcock in there, right?
Yeah.
All right, so...
Hitchcock's number one. That's...
Is he number one?
Yeah. That's...
Resume of him, quick.
Well, Hitchcock's resume for filmography, I mean, he did...
Psycho,
Psycho, Vertigo...
Birds. Rear Window.
Psycho, North by Northwest... The Wrong Man.
Okay, so I'm going to you write down the list right now.
Okay.
So Hitchcock definitely has a good one. But now if we get the folding of Kubrick, we get Strangelove, 2001, Clockwork Orange in there now.
Yeah, Kubrick. I still make a argument for...
Hitchcock is definitely hard to disagree with.
Yeah.
Just because of... I also think, do we have to add that you have... So he didn't write a lot of these scripts either. Do you have to have written them, or do you have to direct them?
Well, directing and writing are two different things. So
right. I will give a bonus if you have directed them. Written them.
Yeah.
So that's why Kubrick gets a little bit of a jump up there, because Kubrick has written those movies.
That's fair.
Let's go. So we have Kubrick and we have that. We'll come back to their resumes in a second here. Let's go to arguably the best modern day director as far as blockbusters go.
And Steven Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg. So he already wins with arguably two of the best movies of the newer centuries.
Yeah.
With Schindler's List.
Oh.
And with... So as far as writing credits go, that's what I'm going to go with first. So he wrote Poltergeist, so that's a check. I'm not a big horror fan, but you have to respect that. Close Encounters.
Yeah.
Goonies. We should write a number beside two, Joel. We'll just figure this out. So, yeah, he wrote all those, right? He wrote those movies. He picked up the screenplay that Kubrick did for AI. And then turned it into his own and then put it out for himself. But that was a Kubrick idea, AI. So I don't know. We kind of split that, I believe.
Yeah.
Then he's been in charge of all the Medal of Honor. So that's as far as writing goes. You get a little bit of a bonus from that. But the main focus we're going to be on is directing, as to help Hitchcock. You know, he has more advantages because Hitchcock was more of a director than a writer. So Jaws, really the first big movie he directed.
Yeah.
So that's huge. That's a Hall of Fame movie.
Yeah.
Close Encounters, Hall of Fame movie. This little movie called Raiders of the Lost Ark.
E.T.
Twilight Zone, the movie. Yeah. Temple of Doom, The Color Purple, Empire of the Sun, The Last Crusade.
Huh.
I've never heard of Always.
No, neither have I.
I want to see who's in the cast here. Richard Dreyfuss, Holly Hunter, John Goodman. Decent cast, but I've never heard of it. It's got a 50 in Metacritic, so obviously just based on that, it didn't leave enough of a mark. So, but Hook, classic. And then 93, Joel. This is just dumb. Schindler's List and Jurassic Park in 1993.
Just best of both worlds. Very serious, like, Schindler's List is...
But then, in 97... You know, Amistad, okay, decent movie, but he has Last World on his credentials.
Yeah.
But then, comes back in 1998.
That just... Holy crap, Saving Private Ryan.
So I think, to me, I think, you know, he is two of the best entrances to any movie of all time, with Raiders and with Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah, that the first little bit, and just like... I think the one thing that Spielberg had was he had range.
Mm-hmm. And 2002 shows that. With one of my favorite movies of all time, Catch Me If You Can.
Yep.
Which I think should have been Leo's first Oscar. Or one of the few times definitely deserved the Oscar. Minority Report, which I don't think gets enough love.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, back to back meh. Terminal? Did you like The Terminal?
I enjoyed The Terminal. It was alright.
War of the Worlds, I freaking hated.
Yeah.
But Munich, damn.
Yeah.
But then he hits an all-time low.
Yeah.
With Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
And then Tintin, I've heard mixed reviews on that.
Yeah, same with Warhorse.
Warhorse, then Lincoln.
Yeah.
Kills it. Bridge of Spies, it stole Rocky's supporting actor, so I'm gonna shit on Bridge of Spies because of that, because they stole the best actor from Stallone. And so Spielberg, you know, you can almost debate him ahead of Kubrick at times, but yeah. Who has more iconic movies? It's hard to say, because most people would say that, well, Spielberg has more iconic and Hall of Fame movies. Kubrick has the iconic movies in 2001 and The Shining.
Yeah.
Both. Like, 2001 is on the top of most list overall of all time.
Yeah. It's one of those movies that you always see mentioned. Always, always, always.
So next, we're going to go to our next candidate. We have about 7 of these that we're going to go through and then rank them. Our next candidate, what's his name, Joel? Martin Scorsese.
So I'm gonna go through his writing credit.
Okay, so tell me his writing credit, and I'm in the directing, so I'll take over for you from there.
So, not a whole lot until this little movie for a screenplay based on this gangster's Goodfellas.
So he wrote Goodfellas. He didn't write Taxi Driver.
He did not write Taxi Driver.
Okay, cool.
He had writing partners on Goodfellas.
Okay. Oh, still, he came up with it. So that's the first time he writes. It's not till 1990.
No, he's written a bunch of little things beforehand, but nothing.
But as far as big... Like, big budget.
Yeah, big budget. That was the first really big one.
Because he, as before we go on here, he has a few bigger movies beforehand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And 1995, he helps write Casino.
Oh, shit.
And then after that, it kind of just... those are his two last ones that he really wrote. And then Vinyl, and we know how that all went. But Josh, directing, what has he done?
So directing, you know, he has his little short films at the beginning. And I'm just going to go by, like, I've never seen Mean Streets, which seems like his first big one, but it's got a decent rating. De Niro's in it.
Yeah.
And Harvey Keitel is in it. So, you know, decent rating. But we're going to start where it all kind of started as far as I'm concerned. And that's Taxi Driver.
Yeah, I love Taxi Driver, Josh. Oh.
Taxi Driver, another that's iconic first ballot Hall of Famer type of movie.
Yeah.
As you move on, I'm just going to go by the iconic movies, because that's what we're looking for here. It's those movies that when you look at a movie reel, you look at them like, yep, I know what that movie is, even if you've never seen it.
Yeah, Raging Bull.
Raging Bull, which would be next. The Color of Money. I love that movie with Paul Newman and Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And I want to go through all-time actors as far as movies. And I think two we're going to really look at as far as the past 20 years is Cruise and Hanks. Because some of the movies they have, you just don't realize the resume they really have. It's so good. But that's another day. Maybe we'll do that in the next Shooting the Breeze. So The Color of Money, he directed the Michael Jackson Bad video.
Yeah.
Then Goodfellas. then Cape Fear.
The you skipped over one, The Last Temptation of Christ.
The Last Temptation of Christ, yes.
Yeah, that.
But then we have Goodfellas. Then we have Cape Fear, which is just chilling. Then he did another Michael Jackson thing. Then Casino. Then Kundun, which I've never seen, but I've heard okay things. Then, I don't know, Bringing Out the Dead, I've never really seen that. Metacritic rating of 70. So the next really big one, and this is when Marty, this is the difference with Marty and Spielberg. Well, Spielberg kind of dipped a little bit in the 2000s. This is when I think Marty really made a comeback and really stepped out, Joel.
Yeah.
So he starts with Games of New York. Another, that 2002 for Leo is a power force. Holy crap. Yeah. Games of New York and Catch Me If You Can? How the hell did he not win the Oscar then?
I know.
And, I mean, you have arguably the greatest actor of the modern era in there as far as getting into character in Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
In there, and then he goes back with Leo. Kind of what he had with De Niro, he had with Leo.
Yeah.
And he had Avatar in 2004. Then he had this little movie called The Departed.
Just a small little movie.
Love Jack Nicholson's terrible fake Boston accent in there. Directed the first episode of Boardwalk Empire.
Which I
now,
love.
Shutter Island, I've never seen it, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, it's an all right movie.
I think it gets, it's not an iconic, but it's something you put on the Scorsese reel.
Yep.
Hugo, which got a good buzz, and it was nominated for Oscars. Wolf of Wall Street.
I'm still a little mixed on, but
yeah.
It's still Martin Scorsese, and it's still debauchery, so I can
And then nothing, Vinyl, which was a bust, and it just got canceled.
Yeah, but I mean, he's got Silence coming out, which...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be his rebound, but it's like, holy crap.
And then the next director we're going to go to, I think, is a sleeper in some aspects, and that's Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
Quentin. So I think writing and directing more or less go hand in hand with him.
Oh, yeah.
So we start off with this little movie, and I mean little movie, the little movie that could, Reservoir Dogs.
I love Reservoir Dogs, that... I can't sing its praises enough.
Is that your favorite Tarantino movie, or have we not got there yet? Don't say it, but have we not got there yet?
We're close, but we're gonna get there.
Yeah, it's up there. It's in my top three. It's not my favorite. Next one, iconic Hall of Famer, first ballot, Pulp Fiction.
Yep, that's my that has a little.
That is a very close second for me.
Yeah,
but it's hard to deny it. Arguably his best film ever done.
Yeah.
Arguably. Natural Born Killers, which doesn't get the buzz, but it's a good film. From Dawn Till Dusk. Jackie Brown, which I think is an underrated Tarantino movie that doesn't get enough praise. And then my favorite one, Kill Bill.
I've never been huge on it, but it definitely, I get the reasoning behind.
More Kill Bill 1 than 2.
Yeah.
That scene before Lucy Liu. Just the way he, just everything with that is so brilliant. It's just the mastermind of Tarantino at its best. And then he kind of had his little jump.
I do want to hit on one thing, like, and it's so small and minute, but it's definitely, he directed 2 episodes of CSI.
Yeah, I was going to skip that because I was going to wonder if we were focusing more on movies or TV. I guess we talked about the Jackson videos, though.
Yeah. So it definitely was something that stood out, and that was my first real exposure to Quentin Tarantino was little kid watching CSI and just Grave Danger, one of the characters in trouble, and Quentin directed it, and my mom still curses him to this day for directing that, just for the stress it caused.
Was it a good episode?
It was a really good episode.
And then we have a little bit of a drop-off period that he would even admit.
Yeah.
Where he kind of just had passion projects, kind of like we would. He's not on the list, but kind of like we saw with Kevin Smith now.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith's the guy that is just. He's just not at the level of these guys, but I just want to give him an honorable mention. But he kind of experimented a little bit in 2007 with Death Proof and Grindhouse. And then in 2009, he came back hard with Inglourious Basterds.
I never really liked Inglourious Basterds.
It rivals Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction for number 2 for me at times. Just because I love World War II and I love the Hitler scene is pretty damn awesome. The cast is arguably, next to Pulp Fiction, the best cast he's ever put together.
Yeah, he's very good at assembling people.
Then Django, which I'm more mixed on Django, to be honest.
I enjoyed I enjoyed.
And then, you know, he did some stuff. His screenplay was for Dusk Till Dawn was made. And then The Hateful Eight, which I wasn't huge on.
I enjoyed it. It was all right, but definitely had its moments where it was a little like, It had moments where it just felt like it needs a cut.
And then we don't know what he has next. We could see Kill Bill 3 next. We don't know.
Apparently, his movie in development, rumored, is Faster Pussycat Kill Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what the synopsis off of IMDb is, after three female strippers go on a criminal rampage, they get entangled with an elderly man who has a sum of cash. When they realize this, they create a plan to rob him.
Hmm.
It sounds like a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Sounds a little bit like it. And then I bring, not that they're in this category, but I think we want to bring a little bit, some people to the main, to the new modern era.
Yeah.
I think we'll do two each, and then we'll go, and then we'll finish this up. So for me, two of the people in the modern era, they're not going to make the top five, but these are people that have an opportunity to make the top five, because I think the directors we just listed, Joel, are in the top five of all time. And there's probably someone we're missing that's an older director that we're just not thinking of.
Yeah.
But those are, I think, what you and I would agree is as we did the top five, those are the top five ever.
You know, you can make an argument for Cameron to slip in at some point, but all through Quentin would be the one that you could be a little bit more fast and loose with. I mean, resume for Spielberg, Scorsese, Kubrick, and Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm. It's done. It's solid. Stupid.
Yeah,
it's stupid. You look at the iconic movies in there, but we'll finish that off. Just as far as current ones, I have Lord & Miller, and you have a little show that they did on MTV that never really got a chance, Clone High, which is really, really funny, and I suggest everyone go watch it. They directed some episodes of The Myth and Red Man Show, so they had a little bit of a small start. And then they directed, not directed, but produced 17 episodes of How I Met Your Mother. They've been producers on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. They've written for Brooklyn Nine-Nine. They've written for How I Met Your Mother. And then they wrote Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, the Lego Movie. They've been just involved with a lot of – then you have the 21 Jump Streets, Last Man on Earth. So they've been involved with a lot of big projects.
Yeah. I think my modern era one, the Russo Brothers.
Yes.
I mean, they helped direct – several episodes of the direct five episodes of Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm.
They worked on a little show called Happy Endings,
which I love.
They directed the pilot for that one, and they worked on this little show that I think I hold a little bit closer to my heart than you, but it's a little show called Community.
I know we hold them at the same level.
Yeah, they helped direct the pilot for that. So they've done comedy good, and then they've worked on these little movies called, what are they called? Captain America?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Are those any good?
They're okay, actually.
Yeah, they...
They directed arguably the best superhero movie scene of all time, though.
So I guess that helps pad their resume a little bit. But they've got a ways to go, but they've definitely proven that they built something up, and they're entrusted with Marvel's biggest movie, so...
And then my second nominee as far as current directing is Ben Affleck. He's only done really three movies, but they're knockouts.
Yeah.
Gone Baby Gone, The Town, and Argo. He's already have an Oscar for directing as well.
Yeah.
And he's going to be part of the Batman... And he has the movie Live by Night, which has a decent cast. You know, it's got Elle Fanning, Zoe Saldana, Scott Eastwood, Anthony Michael Hall, Selena Miller. So a pretty decent cast. Chris Mancilla, Chris Cooper. A lot of pretty damn good cast. Affleck has been hitting a lot of stuff out of the park lately.
Yeah. And final one for me is this little guy called... Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Talk about superhero movies. I mean, he started off one of his first movies, The Following, which was an indie movie that he did. Then Momentum,
which is really good, actually.
Yeah. Insomnia. Then he was given this little movie called Batman Begins, which was a solid, you know, after everything that happened to the Batman character, this is definitely a nice return for him.
Mm-hmm.
Prestige, which is a fine movie. And then a movie that will forever rest very close to my heart, The Dark Knight. Just Heath Ledger, everything worked in that.
You want to hit on the iconic. I think out of all these directors we have, one I think we both have to mention before we go back to the list is Alejandro.
Yeah.
Who is probably the best overall current director right now. His last two pictures have won Picture of the Year. Actually, no. Did The Revenant win Best Picture this year? I can't remember.
It feels like so long ago.
No.
I don't think so.
No, The Priest one won it.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's pretty much guided people to pretty close. He's won back-to-back directors of the year, is what it is.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, so Alejandro is just his passion for... He wanted to shoot in natural light during an Alberta winter, which, trust us, we live here. They can get a little nasty.
Oh, yeah.
So I respect his passion. He's a great director, and... Can't go without. I think he's probably the best out of the ones that we have overall mentioned. But personally, I love the work of Phil Lord, Ben Affleck, and the two that you mentioned with Christopher Nolan and the Russos.
Yeah.
But out of the directors we listed, who do we think is number one, Joel?
Hitchcock.
So go by him again. What does he have for as far as iconic movies?
Psycho, North by
Psycho,
Northwest,
Birds. Rear Window.
Yeah, The Window. Just the way the legend of Hitchcock grows with stories of him on set scaring people, the way he freaked people, way he got the freaky shower scene in Psycho. They're just movies that people constantly go to, and they're movies that you're like, even to this day, they hold the test of time, and they're shot in the 40s and 50s.
Just trying to think here. I think I'd put mine around Kubrick or Spielberg, but it's hard to define because there's still probably Stanley Kubrick without Hitchcock. I don't know if there is a Spielberg or a Spielberg for sure. I think I put Scorsese ahead of Spielberg.
Yeah.
I think this is fair. You could put Hitchcock and Kubrick 1 and 2, and it's very easy to switch the two of them.
Yeah.
I will give you credit. I think Hitchcock is number one because he's the definitive director.
Yeah.
The vision that Kubrick has is unreal.
Oh, yeah.
It's just unreal. It's like a sliver of difference. And then Scorsese just hitting things out of the park. Spielberg and Cameron, I think Cameron is ahead of Quentin.
Yeah.
And Spielberg and Cameron are – the reason they're so high is they are the blockbuster director.
Yeah.
These other three directors are just brilliant. Oh, and know a guy that I feel bad leaving out in here is Woody Allen.
Yeah.
Wes
Anderson.
Wes Anderson's another one. Wes isn't making the top five. Woody Allen, you can argue, could make it in there as well. But it's just – you look at those three and they're just the idealist artists of directing. And you look at their pictures, and then you look at Cameron and Spielberg, and they are the idealist blockbuster movie.
Yeah.
And Cameron's made like Oscar type of movies, but I don't think like Titanic was never meant to be like an Oscar bait type of movie. It was just meant to be a movie about the Titanic.
Yeah.
And Spielberg has kind of leaned that way lately with stuff like War Horse and whatnot, and Saving Private Ryan. To lead him that way.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that.
We're going to go with Alfred Hitchcock, number one director of all time.
Yep.
Again, you can switch these back and forth. It's really hard to look at one or the other and be like, that one's better than that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of talent.
Yeah,
but
for
Cameron
sure.
Cameron is not the top of all time. He's a good director.
But, yeah, I don't think he's ahead of Spielberg, for sure.
No.
So, yeah. I think that was a fun discussion.
Yeah.
I think we broke that down really well.
I think we traveled all over the world with this podcast. It's just kind of like a typical conversation almost.
This is what Shooting the Breeze is all about, folks.
Yeah.
So, and there's much more we want to hit on, but we've already gone a little longer than we like to go. This is about the sweet mark where we like to end our podcast. So, until next time, cheers. Oh, by the way, the Lakers just wasted $62 million on Timothy Mozgov. I hate my life.
A happy Lakers fan, folks.
Yeah. Until next time, cheers.
Go Lakers.
Enjoy the day, people.